Good evening to everybody on Zoom as well. Thank you all for being here tonight. Welcome to Seattle University, to our guests from off campus. Happy you're here. Happy that Seattle University can participate in the great minority report of the global disorder, especially one of its more virulent outbreaks in this country. So that's in the background. But as we say in philosophy, never waste a good crisis. And so one of the opening responses, winter in America, again. Thank you all for being here to learn about the book, to share your contributions from the book. I think it's a really, really good response in which we begin to think not, let's just do political sloganeering and pretend that it's poetry, but really use the immense powers of the poetic voice to call us to a more fundamental consciousness and a more fundamental way of being, and to really lodge a serious complaint in the official view of being about who we're being told that we are. I'm also very happy to say that there's only one piece in here that's not a poem, and that piece is by me. It's the afterword for the text. But I'm very happy to say tonight I'd like to talk about the afterword as if it were a foreword and make it the foreword for this evening. It's a small Zen reflection on the book, on the task at hand, on our time. And I'd like to just say one or two things about it and read a paragraph from it. Then I'll introduce our MC for the evening, Paul Nelson. The angle that I took from a Zen perspective has to do with a old teaching story that one finds in East Asia, China, certainly in Japan. And life seemed very hard, seemed dark, like things were never going to get better. And a teaching story emerged that there were three ages of the teaching of the Dharma. And the worst is when things fall so far away from the time of the historic Buddha that it's just words without a context. We don't understand anything. Slogans without wisdom. Gestures without deep grounded practice. And they call this time the time of Mappo. Mappo was the degenerate time of the teaching. It was so degenerate that you could even say the wisest things, but we were so corrupt and the discourse was so poorly directed that it just sounded like you were speaking no known human language. This was believed a lot of time. People say, well, we'll wait for things to get better. We'll wait for time to return to how great it was in the time of the Buddha. In this period, a practitioner I think very highly of, Zen Master Dogen, so we're talking early 13th century, he said, this is garbage. This is a very bad teaching. It's a very bad teaching because, first of all, it's like saying, wow, if I'm really, really sick, I'll just be sick and then I'll wait for my practice to start when I feel better. Or if things are really, really hard in the country, we'll wait for times that are better, and then we'll do real poetry and real things. Practice is to live in the time that you have. It's the only time that you have. And you see it most at play when times are hard, when things seem really hellish. And it's really, if we're honest, for any serious student of history, it's always some kind of Mappo. It's around that kind of difference in degree. There were no golden ages. It's always been hard. That's why we practice. That's why we're poets. That's why we try to clear our minds. And so my little piece talks about that. I'll just read a little tiny thing about it because it reminds us of what the Bodhisattva ideal is. And I quote here a very colorful practitioner, the late Albert Saijo. Bodhisattva vows. Bodhisattva vows to be the last one off the sinking ship. You sign up and find out it's forever. Passenger list endless. Ship never empties. Ship keeps sinking, but doesn't quite go under. And so that's winter in America again. As in, it's often winter in America. It's a wintry history we've had, honestly. Nostalgia for when it was better is really not to know your history and not to have solidarity with those who have suffered in the long march of our winter. And so Dogen responded that such a sentiment, this mappo, this save it for a better time to practice, was rooted in a fundamental misunderstanding of practice itself. Given that the Dharma gates are boundless, practice is not even a matter of accomplishment. The passenger list is endless, and the ship is always sinking. Practice is not a matter of achieving some future state in which we can perform superhuman feats. We just try as hard as we can, do what we can, because our practice is the practice of winter in America. And I think this book really brings home all the different ways that we can form this and to do this, to clear our mind, to open our hearts, to begin to practice solidarity, to render more audible voices that are surgically rendered inaudible, to do the hard, good work of practice in this wintry nation we call our own. And so, an exciting book. I'm so happy you're here tonight. And our MC tonight, Paul Nelson, one of the editors of this text, a great force for this kind of practice in our region. Ryukan is his Dharma name, poet, master interviewer, but also someone who gets into all kinds of good trouble. And that's Paul Nelson, and he'll take over for tonight. So thank you and welcome everyone.
He does a great introduction and then he lets someone in the Zoom room. So he's got it all together. Welcome to Seattle University. I'm grateful to be here. If you're speaking tonight, be sure you speak up, project, so that the people who are listening through the Zoom room can hear you. I know some of you have more quiet voices. This is a time to belt it out. We're grateful to Seattle U, and I'm grateful to all the people in the room who had something to do with the book. This is our first public reading. We had two Zoom readings before, and this particular reading is also being Zoomed, and people are coming in left and right here. So if you see that, you can just click them on when you're there. Otherwise, I'm in the corner trying to get them on through my phone. There's a poem in this book that I wrote called Self-Care Tips for the New Winter in America. And as I think about that, and that was written in November. And now here we are, and these self-care tips are really necessary and hard to maintain. I'll read that poem later tonight, but one of the lines in it was, try not to bite anybody, you know? And I think that's really good advice. So we're gonna hear a wide array of responses to what happened this past November. And we have on the line from Tucson, Arizona, Katie Sarah Zale. And I'd like her to come on and tell us about how this book got started and a little bit about what we did and to read one of her contributions. So please, a warm welcome for Katie Sarah Zale.
Thank you so much, Paul. Can you hear me, everybody?
Yes.
Is that good?
Yeah.
I wish I could be with you in Seattle. I taught in Seattle years ago, and then I lived in Port Townsend. So here I am now in Tucson, and if I may say, it's 85 degrees today.
Stop.
Let me just say that I take joy and celebration where I can these days. So I'm one of the eight editors who came together following the election to give birth to this wonderful book we have here, which the title is, if you don't know, a tribute to Gil Scott-Heron's song of the same name. And you can just go to YouTube and listen to that. The inception of this anthology began with a recollection of Sam Hamill's anthology Poets Against the War. I was deeply concerned about U.S. domestic issues, the Middle East and Ukraine, and in general, U.S. culpability for problems around the world. Following the election, I contacted Paul Nelson to share my depression here and suggested a call for poems. And he jumped on the idea. And he said, yes, And we can get a book out before the inauguration. So I step back here, but you know what? We did it. In the call for poems, we use Sam's words. These are the voices of our poets. They come from every segment of society. They also celebrate our country by expounding a compassionate view of the universe. A government is a government of words. And when those words are used to mislead, to instill fear, or to invite silence, it's the duty of every poet to speak fearlessly. We were clear in the call that we didn't want any angry rants, any screeds. We didn't even want the president-elect's name mentioned. So close to 300 poets responded, and Greg Bem's Carbonation Press agreed to publish, and Roberta Hoffman created the cover based on an image by her son Jasper. So we worked day and night, literally, reviewing the submissions, reading them out loud, taking everyone to heart, and foregoing time with friends and family and the holidays and even work. The poems in this anthology address frightening human acts, destruction of our environment, the unbridled use of power, the pervasive narrative in this country that Black lives do not matter, patriarchy, reproductive injustice for women, silent support for the US prison industrial complex, and a lack of compassion for diverse gender identity, immigrants, and unsheltered populations. So these poems are rooted in a belief that the incoming administration will not relieve or heal us from our nation's. I want to share that just about an hour ago, I received an email from Quanetta Harris. She's an incarcerated poet who was published in Winter in America. And this is what she wrote. I just got the book. One, two, three, six exclamation points. It's beautiful. I love the cover art. I'm reading aloud one a day at 6 p.m. from my cell door. We have nice guards. They may let me stand in the day room to read aloud. So, lots of hopes. So excited. Perusing it, I forced myself to put it down because I won't get the rest of my work done. Thank you, Katie. Thank Paul for me. Thank Aaliyah. These words will be shared with many. Signed, Juanetta. So this anthology is a gift from our team to you and for others like Quinetta. I'll read a very, very short poem, and it's based on a poem by William Stafford. The name of it is For My Friends Who Are Not Afraid. It is time to be afraid. Time to look deep into the first person you meet. Stay silent until their fear locks with yours. Steady one another as your knees falter, as the struggle to find words brings you down. What you fear takes you into yourself. Here we are, each alone. We are now the country we asked for. We carried each other here. Thank you. And I'll give it back to you, Paul.
Thanks, Katie. The fact that Katie Sarah Zale is connected to poets who are incarcerated and got Quanetta to send work and put it in is a testament to her character. And that's a really beautiful thing to be a part of. Very, very touching and very, very beautiful. Thanks for that. So we have, I think, about 10 poets to read tonight. And the order will be Catalina, Stacy, Zach, Taryn, Debbie, Matt, Gabriella, and then myself. And I'm just going to read the bios from the book. I just will say one thing. Jason and I had a moment beforehand outside, and Cascadia Poetics Lab exists not because we want to create Cascadia at this very moment, that we advocate a secession from the United States, as enticing as that sounds right about now. But when one becomes Cascadian in one's own mind, there's a shift that happens, and you connect more deeply to the land, and you can have values that are more connected to nature than to what a neoliberal plot is going on. And Jason said, this is looking very prophetic right now, the notion of Cascadia. And I think that's very, very true. Catalina Marie Cantu is an indigenous Mexicana, multi-genre writer and Vona alum. Her poetry and prose appeared on Poetry on Buses, Seattle Poetic Grid, The Inspired Poet, and were anthologized in Jack Straw Writers, Raven Chronicles, Take a Stand, Art Against Hate, Indomitable, Indomables, a multi-genre Chicanx, Latinx women's anthology, Writing the Land, Food Ways, and Social Justice, and, of course, In Winter in America Again. She's involved in the group La Sala, who helped co-sponsor the last couple of Cascadia Poetry Fests, and we welcome her now. Please welcome Catalina Cantu.
I really am this short. I should have worn my taller shoes, but I'm going to adjust the camera. I want to thank Paul and Katie and all the editorial board and my family and friends who inspire me to continue to write, especially in these times. And so I wrote this poem, Do I Worry? Because I come from a long line of warriors. My immigrant ancestors knit, crocheted, and sewed their worries into garments I wore from the time I was born. That weight to keep food on the table, a roof overhead, doing back-breaking labor on the railroads, in the fields and factories. No hope for a future without sweat and dirt and grease. The church preached eternal salvation in another life. I stay sleepless, the what ifs, what to do's, how can I's? Why do I feel so powerless? I'm an educated doer, a fixer, a problem solver for everyone else, until one day I began to meditate. It saved me from the worry, but if I stopped meditating, the worry crept onto me, wrapped me like a burrito, swallowed me until I could not sleep. I start from either my head down or my feet up. I begin to relax. The worry slides off me like butter on a fresh corn cob. My eyes become heavy. Sleep swaddles me like a newborn. Thank you.
Next up is Stacy Jones. She works here, isn't that? And she helped with the tech too. She finds poetry in numbers and occasionally numbers in poetry. Born and raised in Minnesota, she now makes her home here. She's taught economics at Seattle U for more than 20 years and has published work on inequality. An economics professor and a poet. You don't see that every day. Please welcome Stacy Jones.
Thank you. Yeah, I will belt it out. Thank you for everyone for making this opportunity real. It's amazing to be with this community in this time. Just one sentence on the economics professor thing that I think it's important to know that as of last weekend, every census site on inequality, poverty, race, gender, ethnicity was down. So the fragility of our knowledge infrastructure was in plain view. And I think I wrote this poem at a time when I was feeling a little gentler and a little more tender about humanity than I was on Sunday when I noticed that when all those websites were down and I was trying to prepare to teach. But this poem came out of phone banking prior to the election, and it's the conversation that perhaps I hoped or didn't have when I was phone banking in those weeks prior to the election. So it's called Phone Banking Instructions. And the instructions came from the Bay Area Coalition that organized phone banking. So their words, not mine. Handy all-purpose phrases for connecting with those who don't or won't vote. Five handy all-purpose phrases. Number one, tell me more about that. Or better, breathe it to me. In and out, gently, like that. Yes, I'm breathing too, here in Seattle. Listen, when you feel broken, come back to this. Breathe. Every breath is whole. Number two, I'd really like to know more about dot, dot, dot. What wakes you up at 3 a.m.? The secret you'll die with. What you have lost and will never find, the places you hurt. Number three, that sounds really hard. No, I heard it. No, I breathed it. No, we are still here. We are still here. Number four, it sounds like try to summarize what you heard them say. A telephone ringing in the night. A stranger banging on the door. A bone breaking. A map bleeding. Number five, to gently pivot in another direction. I hear you. Brief pause. What I'd really like to know more about is the last time you held a baby. How she felt in your arms, what her eyes did when they found yours, the life you want for her, the nation you want for her.
Kate is sort of like live blogging this in the chat. I love that. I want to thank a couple of volunteers tonight, Zach Charles and Megan Foster. Give them a hand. They're both involved in a committee called Cascadia 2050. That's a hopeful thought right there, isn't it? And they represent the youth committee of the Cascadia Poetics Lab. Anytime you look at the demographics and you see 0 to 18, this little bar, and 18 to 34, this little bar, and 65, and stuff like that. So we knew we had to do something about it. And I think that the concept of Cascadia is in very good hands with the next generation based on the work that I've seen from the folks on this committee. Zach Charles has been involved with us for a couple of years, and now he's editing the podcast, Cascadian Prophets, and he's got his own book out, and he's got work in this book. He's a middle school Spanish teacher, teaches on Vashon Island, a poet and multimedia artist. They worry constantly about the effects of the current economic and physical infrastructure of the overdeveloped nations on all the individuals of our world, from algae to ant to orca to elephant. They believe part of the solution lies in organic form, from organic poetry, as described by Charles Olson, to the Miyawaki method of forest planting, developed by Dr. Akira Miyawaki. He's my friend. Please welcome Zach Charles.
Hello, everybody. I'm grateful to be here. I'm really honored to be in this book alongside some writers and poets who I really admire. And so it's really a pleasure to be here today and to participate in this way, constructing the world that we want to live in. My poem is called Winter Storm. One. Last night's bomb cyclone, uprooting winds, alki, and up the Cascades, snow and fog of crisp new breath. Two, I am anxious even to write this. But if it is crap, at least in it there might be a seed. Because that almost a hurricane was nothing compared to what hit the Sonoran Desert's Basil's Italian restaurant last Saturday. Not really Sonoran, more Tucson. Every saguaro for 50 miles flung its arms up in shock, and I'm only telling you a fraction of the story. From now on, Pappy's birthday weekend marks the first winter storm. 15, 16 November, water's warming, fueling the shaking of moisture and air, when Eloise called Jane a cunt and a slut, and threatened to kick out Delilah too from the family after one Cosmo for the old lady, who swears by their lukewarm SpaghettiOs. Beau called them SpaghettiOs, and the whole wait staff laughed. And swears she shouldn't have to deal with this, and swears all us motherfuckers are out to get her dangerous immigrants into her life, swearing the kids need to see this, and looking at her across the table, the colors of blonde and orange, and victimhood swearing remind me of a different orange colored one swearing through $200 million of ads that they will instruct via executive order every federal agency to cease all programs that promote the concept of sex and gender transition at any age. With every word forcing their personal insecurities without consent onto queer and immigrant family histories, families like that of Angel forced to have these conversations. Get to know your rights. Get ready. Talk to your kids. Look into how you're going to handle being detained, being deported. Swears like walls that uproot saguaros. One source swore Page Six to secrecy. Their hair color can vary wildly from dark blonde to light to bright orange, depending how long their hairdresser can get them to sit still and let the color do its job. Gil Scott Heron said, nobody's fighting because nobody knows what to say. But if I learned anything last Saturday, after Eloise marched off in a huff out of that dimly lit with faux stained glass lamp soap opera of a fucking dinner, and the waiters brought out the cake, and we sang fucking happy birthday, I learned. My family is fucking fighting with no fear of deportation. And words don't mean much to folks who never stop fucking talking. And fewer words, and staying still long enough to maintain eye contact, means much more when there just ain't much to say. Yes, Eloise, you should leave. Knowing when, that's the lesson in honesty George Washington teaches. I keep sighing watching this storm roll in slow motion. It's deja vu in my human memory all over again. As Pappy said, this must be Phoebe's revenge from beyond the grave. I and the climates, the Constitution, that noble piece of paper, as Gil Scott Heron called it, whipped to shreds by wind and fiery hail and rain. Meanwhile, if Moses were to come down from the mountain's peak, right now they would smash the stones they carried upon witnessing all the golden cow, haired Eloises, and day one dictators claiming to be the closest to God, claiming to be of anything but the dirt and shit and stories left by those before them, those same pieces of God we're all made from. Thank you.
Thanks, Zach. Our next poet is Taryn Campbell, a widely unknown and unpublished Zen anarchist, ego-feminist, and queer haiku poet living in Cascadia. She is a Zen practitioner. I can't tell you how great, how much I rely on my own Zen practice to deal with situations like this. And when I think of Zen and I think of Taryn, I think of a Dharma talk that she gave here at the Eco Sangha, which happens Wednesday nights. If you want to sit and want a Sangha, Jason runs it and has for many years out of this university. and the Dharma talk I think about regularly. That tells you something about the potency of her Zen and their Zen and their humanity. Please welcome Terry Kemp.
I dedicate this reading to all beings who are being persecuted today. Immigrants, Palestinians, trans folk, journalists, and the great earth. I want to make a shout out to all the people rising up, lawyers, teachers, representatives, governors, citizens like you and me. I pray that we will respond with courage to stand up, possibly with more public and risky actions. And I wanted to invoke a couple of my queer ancestors. First of all, Audre Lorde, who said, "Poetry is not a luxury. It is a vital necessity of our existence. It forms the quality of light within which we predicate our hopes and dreams towards survival and change, first into language and then into idea and then into more tangible action." And then Adrienne Rich, who said, "The moment of change is the only poem." Here's a couple of my coup from the book. Actually, four. Election day, the flag at half mast. Electoral college, the long shadow of slavery. Election post-mortem, one nation, so many countries. Unable to vote, the forests, deep silence. And since the election, I've written a few more I wanted to share with you just even this week. Off the hook, redacting myself, gender markers. Improvising democracy, American Bardo. Thank you.
That's fantastic. Our next poet is Debbie Bacharach. She's the author of Shake and Tremor and After I Stop Lying. Her works appeared in Poetry Ireland Review, New Letters, Poet Laureate, and the Writer's Chronicle, among many other journals. She's gotten a Pushcart Prize honorable mention. She's a poetry reader for SWWIM and Whale Road Review. Her website, DeborahBacharach.com. Please welcome Deborah Bacharach.
Thank you all. One of the things I really need right now is to be in community, and just hearing those poems actually here in the room is being very moving and helpful to me. I'm going to read two poems, both of which I wrote during the week of the election. I am afraid of the answer. A couple months before the election at a Comfort Inn in South Dakota, I wait for the elevator with a white-haired white woman and her pressed jeans white man. I am a white woman. Though my hair might be too curly for some folks' comfort, I can nice with the best of them. I open with, "Where are you heading?" and follow up, "Oh, I love the State Fair." Okay, I've only been a half a dozen times, but I get it. I get into it, and not just in an ironic, "God, look at these yokels" kind of way. Quilts make me think of standing before the stiff Tiffany stained glass at the Met with my New York grandma, all that glowing color, and my other grandma saving every scrap after the pogroms, tiny stitches, a way of love. I listen when a 4-H club member teaches me caretaking for pig hooves, a hybrid emery board. I tiptoe through barns, choke on rabbits and goats. For some, this is the smell of home. I tell her my family is on our way to Chicago. Chicago, she says, it's so crowded. And I know, the way my friend tells me she always knows when she has a smacked into a "where are you from, go back" door, crowded is code for black, brown, Jewish, kill them before they kill you. I try to picture us all at the fair, tearing into all American deep-fried everything, stretching out our arms to repair the world. And this poem is called The Map Awash in Red. The map awash in red. Seattle is blue. We chant for solidarity with unceded Coast Salish land. While our plastic dinosaurs hold cute Kamala signs, the stock market hits a new all-time high because he wins. I own stock. I go dancing. Even though I'm so old, I remember Roe v. Wade. A young man grins, tells me I have great moves. I grin back. Go radical on your prepping. That's what my friend, the former activist, says. Stuff your go bag with scotch, cash, a gun, build up your glutes, burn your pussy hat. You could walk to Canada, she says. My son just started college here. He asks for eyeshadow. I'm getting him sparkle hard lipstick too.
I don't think we can walk to Canada anymore. They're booing the national anthem at sports games in Canada. I don't know if you saw that. The Star Spangled Banner. That gives you some idea how we fucked up that in 2 weeks. Canadians are the nicest people, but if you cross them, you know, you see what happens. And these things aren't reeled back as easily as some people would like to think they are. And that really burns me up because Cascadia doesn't stop at the 49th parallel. It goes all the way up to Mount Logan, Alaska. And to be able to have access to Northern Cascadia would be a real shame. So I'll try it on March 1st. There's a Cascadia event in Kelowna, and we'll see what happens. But that's one of the many. I mean, we could go on all night if we wanted to start complaining about the things that have been happening.
And Paul, can I throw in something?
Yeah.
I just want to add the feedback. One piece of feedback that we've gotten so often from these readings is that to hear the poet state their poem in their own voice is what makes these readings so worthwhile. It's just heard it so many times, and really, Deborah, the way she read that poem, I go, nobody could read it like you, Deborah. Yeah.
Thanks, Katie. Our next couple of readers both serve on the board of the Cascadia Poetics Lab. The next one is Matt Treese. He's been on the board for 8 years, and he's still talking to us, which is a really beautiful thing. He's a poet, artist, teacher, and astrologer. He could tell you some things about the astrology this year that would make your hair stand on end. He co-curates the Margin Shift reading series and serves as the poetry editor for the Cayley Review. His poetry has appeared in numerous journals and anthologies, and his first book is coming out through Carbonation Press, The Outside. Please welcome Matt Treese.
Okay. So I'm going to read a couple of pieces. I had enough wherewithal in March of 2020 to realize that, you know, I need to be keeping a journal of this because this is, everything's fallen to shit right now. And so I did, and for the most part in 2020, I wrote basically a little prose poem every day. And the two pieces that are in here were from right around September 11th, right after the wildfires really brought everybody back indoors, and the lockdowns kind of cracked back down again. And so that's kind of the context here. But it's also like what's going on in a lot of these is, you know, watching the national narrative that's happening day in and day out with the press conferences and whatnot, and just seeing the open grifting of the country that was happening. And thankfully, we were able to get a little bit of a reprieve from that administration, but now it's kind of back with a vengeance. So so these pieces, I've titled them Acoustic Treatments. This first one's Acoustic Treatment number 80. Has an epigraph from Stevie Nicks. When the rain washes you clean, you'll know. We have returned to the days of ash, the days of orange and purple sky. We've been unable to breathe for so long. How many years have we let this fire burn? We are burning inside out like we were years ago when the tower card was permanently etched in our DNA. Oh, Prometheus, if we only knew what it takes. This fire, this Armageddon, this Ragnarok, this full circle. Oh, Virgil, where have you taken us in this mortal life? Oh, ghost of Christmas yet to come, we have come again to the last days of human history, to that horizon, threshold of a new world, and still the naysayers, the resentful hordes who desire their chains, threaten to drag us back. We've got some difficult days ahead. Like Dr. King, we've seen the promised land. It's within our reach, our eyes to have seen the glory of the coming. May we get there soon. Feel the rain. When it comes, when it washes us, we'll know. We'll know. An acoustic treatment number 82. My body is a filter. The air is full of the disintegration of planetary history. We are losing our interstitial mind, and our lungs and kidneys and spleens are choking on it. Mars at a standstill, burning so hot with the collective rage fueling this year's novel apocalypse. We come again and again to the last days. Oh, Duncan, how many more times? How many more of these plagues will it take to let go of this deep-seated indignity that is America, a resource stolen, a new mythology of penance in place of in the beginning was the word, replaced with a slave master shouting, you have to earn your keep. Ain't no one got enough back to break to become a child of God. It's a spiritual pyramid scheme we've been conned and left with, this burning wilderness, this Eden on fire. They're destroying the evidence.
How's the sound now? They apparently lost the sound of the Zoom call. Getting a knock. Yes. Gabriela's next. Gabriela Gutierrez Simuz, the author of several poetry collections. Her poetry has been translated into several languages. She's translated much poetry of English into Spanish and vice versa. She's participated in poetry festivals in various countries abroad, including India. She's a Chicana poet who grew up between the central coast of California and Durango, Mexico. She teaches right here in this university, and I'm delighted to present Gabriela.
Good evening. Thank you for being here. This is such a pleasure. I'm so proud of us, of this form of resistance that is going everywhere in droplets. I would like to begin by reading a poem by Veronica Eldridge, who's also in the book. And we just 2 days ago launched our book. She was one of my students and graduated from Seattle University. And we launched Ivan Ivan, which is a children's book that goes right, holds hands with winter in America. So I want to read her poem. Her poem is When Eyes Arrest Your Neighbor. When they arrest your neighbor, you won't find out until later that evening. As an aside, After talking with your vecina for half an hour as her babies run up and down the stairs with delight, the cool evening air will not change. The nearly full moon will still hang in the sky like a glowing orb. The minutes will not slow nor quicken. We will still smile at the sweetness of children. When ice detains your neighbor, the sky will still be blue the next day. The apartment building will look the same with its gray, dark walls and red doors that swing open from time to time. When your neighbor is arrested, they will come for him at dawn before morning breaks. Like usual, the birds will sing this new day to light as his hands are clenched behind his back, just past the bridge where they waited for him. The street bears witness in silence. When your neighbor is arrested, his wife will water the plants out front and wave to you good morning as you walk to your car. The sun will shine quietly. Plants will whisper with the gentlest breeze. The sky will outstretch its clouds like the pink spine of a whale in flight. His disappearance won't appear on the news. You won't receive a red alert about the kidnapping of a middle-aged Mexican man. When you learn of his abduction, perhaps it was the hawk who screeched to first warn you of this injustice. As you drive, the street is the same as always. But you know that somewhere nearby, his children sit at home, weep into the dinner they cannot bear to eat without their puppy. As days, weeks, and months pass, you think of him living in limbo, 241 miles away from his family. A detention is an erasure, and yet your memory resists his removal. When they want his wide, shining smile to disappear into thin air, you don't let it. And my poem is called Walking in Bed. I have walked thousands of miles under cactus, mesquites, huizaches, sweet acacia, and saguaros, walking on sand in my mind. I hold the hands of those children whose parents die without water or adequate shoes, children in tow, rosary in hand. I'm tired. Every night I carry children in my arms, in my dreams, for those Mexican, Haitian, Salvadoran, Honduran, African travelers, pilgrims, migrants, they're coming to see pinguinos, whales, sea lions, elephants at the Seattle Zoo, at Marine World. Dogs at the farmer's market, owned by the people who love them, eat whole wheat bread, gluten-free bowls, meatless dishes, organic vegetables, and are mostly kind. 20 years later, these children will care for you at a facility or at home. Will feed you spoonfuls of cariño in your future when you can no longer walk. fear that my shoes and dreams are no longer repairable. This election speaks a four-year nightmare for children on the tightrope of immigration, abandonment, child labor in the USA, where life for the poor and the immigrants is Disneyland still. Thank you.
Thanks, Gabriella. Self-care tips for the new winter in America. Breathe, practice the self, walk, take the bus, vacate social mierda. Be careful to whom you surrender. Imagine what the mind of the creek would advise as your next move. Stay sober. No amount of wine can erase the enabled hate. Don't worry. Worry is a misuse of the imagination, De Prima New knows as holy. Grieve, then organize. Recognize your bioregion. Ginkgo leaves still fall. Watch them fall. Breathe again. Vow kindness. Constant creation of the self is a tricky mess. It's winter in America again, but always was to many mammals. Vow to end winter in America for them. Adopt C.A. Conrad's intrusion technique. Squeeze toes. Intrusions are temporary, as is every winter. Don't wait for a hero. The hero era's over. Meditate on the image of a Valkyrie in her teacher, swan, and or warrior forms. Eat lighter. Put a face on your food. Hyper local. Listen to Carla Bley. Forge local spaces of difference and social tactics of resistance. Get acupuncture. Breathe mugwort. Bolster electrolytes. Sing the body electric. Build social housing. Enact, by the way, Tuesday election. Enact Medicare for all. Do not patronize monopolies. Get off Facebook. The best response to a poem is another poem. How to live in a moment that is at once daily and mythic. Sit zazen. Do latihan. Keep a war journal. Contemplate. Not so much content, but atmosphere. Blue mental health down by the duck potato. Social doses of penis envy. That's a hallucinogenic mushroom, in case you're wondering. Envision regime change. Get money out of politics. Oppose oligarchy. No, there are no good billionaires. Tantra felicidad. Free Palestine. Free Leonard Peltier. They did. And this was written before they did it. Poetry works. Hear indigenous elders. Honor ancestral homelands. Light sage. Smudge everything. Notice the crimsons and golds and veins and fallen maple leaves. Note your breath. Try not to bite anyone. Avoid AI. AI is the aspartame of consciousness. Show up for yourself. Sing. Whistle. Hear the creek. Get your teeth cleaned. Get a soak. Do yoga. Kapalabhati breathing. Shining skull breath. Light a white candle. Practice sound poetry. Savor vowel sounds. Listen. Find your place where you are. Begin practice. Actualize the fundamental point. Commit. Seek harmony and harmonious intersections. Forget the self. Deepen gratitude. Become a mammal patriot. Finish. Winter in America again. I'm a big Gil Scott-Heron fan. When I was, I think, 18 or 19 years old, I heard this song come on the radio and I was going, I believe it was to school or to the community college, one of two community colleges. And it was Gil doing B movie. And he was talking about Ronald Reagan. He called him Ronald the Ray Gun. And he says, if the song starts, well, the first thing I want to say is mandate my ass. That's the beginning of the song. And the song, I got to the school before the song was over and I stayed in the car with the radio on, listening to Gil. And that was my introduction to him. And I had the chance to see him twice. So that's where this comes from. Winter in America, 1974. Except this is winter in America again. And here's another reference to another one of my heroes, Wanda Coleman. Man, she'd have something to say if she were here right now. Anyway, Wanda's words were, "When under the gun, who has time to keep a war journal?" So lays down the task for Reality Government 2.0. WWF style FBI and CIA ought to scare the lion-hearted. Yet here we sit, wonder how the common people prosper, how withstand bomb cyclones of the atmospheric and cultural, make friends with all enemies within. We once called it intersectionality and found harmony lacking, though Brenda said Occupy gave us clues. In partial November sun, we seek allies. Winter's but one season, though this one's run set for 1,461 days, not counting the last days between the neoliberal and the WWFification of We the People. An eagle at Zazen's end in need of breakfast, past the candlelight, guides Thursday meditation. Vow to harm nothing here. Vow to enter Dharma gates, one of which may be this winter again in U.S. America. This is not bottomless dark. There is no bottom but sky. No sky can't be nourished with what the small intestine won't need. No beginnings except after endings. We must respect choking on the fumes of the neoliberal. Dufu watching the aura's gold and silver grace nights. Michael reducing it to a grab. Olson pleading the polis, which he knew somehow in the 50s was eyes. Joanne in the Bolinas backyard, quail counting the last days of eco-poetics. Worried nature poetry is Brenda's definition of eco-poetics. And with each whiff of worry redirected into the prayer rug, we remember our vow to free the numberless beings. The crow murder, hightailing it to the roost before the bomb cyclone. The Doug Fir smashing the empty metro bus. Those who would guard congressional bathrooms rather than legislate for the polis. So goes the end of empire, which can't withstand the depths of the Aquarian age or whatever juju stands in the way of he who won't be named and his cabinet of predators. My war journal has begun, as you are my witness, and as history attempts to repeat itself in the home of the brave. And the last poem I'll read is called Resistance is a Dharma Project, where fallen maple leaves may be more human than the president-elect's cabinet. Still, no intent to murder the state or even crash a car into it. Just cultivate a small field of grebes and curving wavelets and griefs of all the unexpressed love that we launch from the small intestine and know they meet their intended, never dead friend in the temple open to the sky. Thank you for coming tonight. Buy some books. Thank you for attending. Zoom people, be in touch. We're planning a reading at Elliott Bay. We don't have the date yet, but that's coming. There's also going to be an offsite reading at AWP on the 27th of March at Cal State LA in the Music Hall at 7 p.m. So contributors are welcome to read there if they're going to AWP. There'll be a reading at Santa Cruz. Roxy Power is organizing several readings, one of which is on April 1st in Santa Cruz. And I suspect there will be readings for the next year or two for this book. So stay in touch with Greg Bem, the publisher, who we should thank very much for having the vision, having the patience in dealing with 8 co-editors who had their own minds about how this would work. So thank you, Greg. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And please try not to go crazy in these next 4 years. You have a community of people. Look to them before you do anything crazy like bite someone. Thanks.